With the last minute cancellation of the guest, Rob, Dan, Ken, and Wendy all hopped on after a few week hiatus to talk about some of the major news headlines that have appeared over the last few weeks we haven't had a chance to talk about. As a reminder, in these show notes, none of us are financial advisors and none of this is financial advice. Ken talks about the Athletic Brewing IPO and investing in other alcoholic brands. Rob wants to discuss the Yubei fruit and other adjuncts we do and do not want to see in our beer from now on. Dan updates us on the Minnesota bill passing for to-go beer at breweries and queries us as to if we think it's worth it and what they should do in the future. Wendy finalizes the episode by giving us a major Great American Beer Festival update with this year's downsizing in preparation for next year's massive expansion. Since there was no guest this week, we ended the show with a speculation on the article about Anheuser-Busch looking to acquire more brands, and each of us, the hosts, giving our take on a brewery both in Michigan and nationally that could be ripe for the purchasing.
Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Welcome, everybody. This is episode 290 of the Better on Draft podcast. My name is Ken. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. If you're listening to the podcast, make sure you check us out on our YouTube. That's youtube.com/BetterOnDraft. If you're listening over on YouTube, go download our podcast, like us, review us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review or a 1-star review. You know, whatever you feel like giving today. Once again, my name is Ken. I am drinking from Cap and Cork, the home brewing brewery, Lithuanian Black Metal. I kept calling it accidentally Ukrainian death metal, and the guy was a little confused, but once he figured out exactly what I was going for, he knew what I wanted. So I had the opportunity to go grab that a few weeks ago, but we hope Andy over there is doing well. We know he was having a little bit of a health scare, but go support the brewery over in Macomb, I think is the city officially over there. But let's go around and see what everyone else is drinking, starting with Wendy. Wendy, what do you got?
I am drinking a Scottish Waffles, which is a maple Scottish strong aged in cognac barrels from DVA Brewing in Indianapolis.
All right. And Rob, what do you got?
So I've got pretty much this is Big Bird from, is it Trillium? I think it's Trillium. Yeah. Yeah, it's Trillium.
Sure, it's not Trivium, Rob? Is that their beer?
No, this is from Trillium. I'm pretty sure.
I'm guessing he's just getting confused with the other New England IPA, New England breweries.
Yeah, and I should know because with Treehouse and their labels are not anywhere near as graphic when they do anything like this. So this definitely is Trillium.
I feel like that's a cartoon I would have seen on Adult Swim.
Right. Without a doubt. And also on the side, I've got the wit beer from Athletic.
All right. So you're going really hard and really easy.
Yeah.
Getting nice level right there. What about you, Dan? What do you got?
Speaking about going hard, you know, I've got the trusty vodka soda going on. Got to have that Stoli. Then for shits and giggles, I got one of my own porters that I felt like drinking at room temperature for whatever reason.
Dan, do you stray away from the Stoli at all, or are you just always a Stoli man?
You know, honestly, it's outside of Ciroc, it's my favorite, but Ciroc really isn't good just with soda. Like, it's more of a mixing, in my opinion, at least with like something like orange juice. So yeah, Stoli is typically the one I go to.
Nothing straight?
Like, on the rocks, I'll drink Stoli on the rocks quite a bit. Tito's on the rocks isn't bad. That Kettle One's good. If I had to drink one like on the rocks or like doing a shot, it'd probably be Kettle One. But if I'm mixing it like soda, it's going to be Stoli for sure.
I can't even remember the last time I took a shot of booze. Like, that's just something. Well, between COVID, like, I'm not at home doing shots. So typically,
you're not? Wait,
no, not at all. But I even going to the bar, like, I don't think. Unless, you know, I'm trying to think the last time somebody would have bought me a shot. When was the last time one of you guys had a shot?
The last Friday? After party.
The what after party?
I think she was saying the web after party.
Oh,
World Expo of Beer.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I had Elijah Gray toasted barrel last Friday. That's the first whiskey I've ever had, or bourbon, whatever it is, that I actually enjoyed.
So when I say shot, though, I mean like a shooter, like down the hatch, like no sip. Okay. Just making sure we're on the same page here. Yeah, I can't.
Yeah.
It's just something that I just don't do anymore. Like if I'm going to get some type of booze or something like that, and it's something that I'm not a fan of, like a Jack Daniels or something like that, like I prefer to mix it. And drink it as a drink, or just not drink it at all, because I'd rather go with something else. But
so you're not drinking to get drunk, because basically if you're doing a shot, it's really what you're going for.
There's a lot of times you're drinking and taking shots for a celebration. You know what? I probably figured
shots
out the
are
last
social.
The last time I probably did it was maybe some like Lions game at a bar with like my high school friends. Not in high school, obviously. I was the only one getting into bars in high school. But, you know, probably a few years ago, you know, going to a bar to watch the Lions game, and some, you know, my friend Ed probably just bought a round of Jack Daniels because that's the kind of person he is. So, that was probably the last time I ever did a shot.
But we'll have to fix that soon.
You know what? Sure, why not? C'est la vie. But no guest this week, and I believe Nick is going to be off, so I don't think he's going to be popping in for the show, but that's okay. We got plenty of news. It's been a few weeks since we've actually done the news. Plenty of huge things that have gone on throughout the industry. And we'll start with the first thing that I would like to talk about, which is something I want to talk to you guys about, and that is the explosion of Athletic Brewing. So the Athletic IPO, they're expecting in the next 2 years. So, Rob, you've got an Athletic beer in front of you. And the fact is, Athletic beer is becoming one of the largest largest breweries in the country. And that includes all of the, and not NA beers, all of breweries. It's like top 25 or number 27 or something like that. So given the opportunity of where you see Athletic and where you see the brewery, obviously you can go check back our interview. Do you guys foresee, you know, we're all adults, we all have probably 401ks or some type of investments, investing in some type of alcohol or fermented beverage maker, since they're non-alcoholic, in your portfolio? And we'll start with Rob, because I know Rob does a lot of investing and talks about investing here on the show a little bit. Do you foresee, you know, hashtag ATH or $ATH coming into your portfolio?
I kind of, and it's been a while. I've kind of taken a break off of the investing, and I'm actually trying to get myself reacclimated into some things with options and futures and stuff like that. But whenever I look at any type of doing investing in any stock, there's always this one thing that, Warren Buffett has always said, in that if a company is worth investing, or rather something like, if you can invest in a company and buy your stock and hold their stock for 10 years, then it's not worth investing. And it just seems like with Athletic and just like the whole NA profile of where these NAs are coming from, that I feel like they certainly as hell are not going anywhere. It's still kind of like this infancy of NAs. And it's going to be around for a while. So at least I think so. So for me, I probably would. I'd be curious where the IPO is going to start. And also curious how much I'd have to drop per share to even jump in. Because there's not many other than like Robinhood. I don't know many other apps that are out there to just like general consumers or traders that will allow them to buy shares at the IPO, and some have to wait until the IPO is over, to which sometimes that price could jump from $12 a share to 25, and that could be less attractive to somebody who wants to try and jump in. So I'm curious to see where Athletic thinks it's valued at, to see where that price is going to be. I kind of think it's a beer company. I mean, granted, it's NA, but it's a beer company. I mean, it's not going to be like a Molson Coors, which is like $56, or Carlsberg's at $25. I think it should hopefully come in a bit low. And I think it's something that somebody could just throw some money at, sit on 100 shares and just ride it out for 10 years and see where it goes. I think it'll grow.
What about you, Wendy?
I really don't know enough about investing to speak on that properly. I would probably pick a company like that, though, that I know is doing well and I think will probably continue to do well if you look at the trends.
Daniel.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't jump in on an IPO. You know, so many people jump in on an IPO, and you guys have seen it too. Think about like Coinbase, where, you know, it jumps immediately when it goes live and everyone bought at the top and then loses their ass the first day. Another one never actually gets back to that level. It might be something to look at, but like Rob, I look long term. Like, I'm not trying to make a quick buck. It's not worth it. I'd rather be set up for the future. So if it was maybe in an ETF or something that they were involved in, maybe, but probably not the individual stock, at least not right away when it first comes out.
I mean, where would, that's the thing, is that there that I know, I don't know of any like beer or cocktail stocks that are ETFs. I mean,
there should be one. I'm surprised there isn't.
Yeah.
I don't know of one.
But you think about it, because I mean, there's ETFs for damn near everything.
Yep.
Huh.
Now, one, we are not financial advisors.
Yes.
So please do listen to us. This is just our thoughts and opinions on these matters.
Wait for the 1-star review when someone loses $100,000.
I said the disclaimer I feel like we needed to say. But as you mentioned, like your IPO, as a lot of people who listen to the show know, I used to work for a company called Toast. Their IPO was 40. It got up to 65, and it's currently at 16. So investing, especially in companies that you understand and believe in, you know, Athletic Brewing, with what Rob said, I believe Athletic Brewing will go one of two ways. I think they'll continue. They'll be the mainstay of non-alcoholic beer, and or they get bought out by somebody big and the shareholders probably have a nice payday. Those are really the two options I see with an IPO like that. But as we kind of spoke with, you know, the founders of Athletic on an earlier interview 2 years ago, I think, maybe even more than 2 years ago. I don't think they want, they're not in the game to, they're in the game to make a mark, not to sell out. Now everyone has a price, but I still think they're going to do really, really well. So for me personally, I think that it would be a good, smart investment to put money in to just let it ride, because I don't think, I think the NA trend will subside a little bit, but I think there will be winners and losers, and they will be the winner, in my opinion. No offense to the other NA breweries.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, just like what Dan is saying, it's just, you know, hold off on it. Watch it, see where it goes. And as some of my people who I've watched videos on and done research to look at stocks, pay attention to 6 month, watch a 50 day, mess with those Bollinger Bands if you know what those are, and if it stays in the bands and it goes up, then that's probably looking like something that you'll want to invest in. But also pay attention to the company, and I mean, I feel like with talking to them that they're managed pretty well. I would like to think so. So pretty much companies that are managed well tend to do well in the stock market.
And they're not the first American brewery on the stock market. Like Boston Beers in the New York Stock Exchange, Diageo, which is Guinness, Constellation, which is Corona. You know, there are plenty of different groups to look at for your information. And if you're someone who is looking to invest in the stock market and alcohol is something that you believe in, or a product you believe in, you know, that's something that you can go and you can look into, is looking at some of these brands that are, you know, they're going to be a lot bigger. They're your Anheuser, Busch, InBev type sized companies. So you're going to have to go into that. But if you believe in the product and believe in the company, or believe that they're just going to make money, then, you know, that's what you believe in. Again, this is not financial advice. So please do not gamble, away on, what we say here, especially on, the stock market. That is for sure. But that's the first thing I wanted to talk about. Glad I was able to, discuss it. Rob, what's on the news for you today?
So I had two of them. I was debating on which one I was going to bring up. So I was going to go with the lighter one first. And apparently we've been seeing a new trend in beer that's been taking shape, which not necessarily, I guess, well, I guess we will say it's a new trend. It's definitely not something I haven't seen already before. But in this trend, there is a purple yam from the Philippines called the ube that has been in demand in the food and drink world. And as you would expect, when things are in demand in the food and drink world, it makes its way into the craft beer scene. So there was an article on VinePair that was talking about this, and there was a couple different breweries that have been making an ube beer this year, one of them being Tilted Mash in, I think it's Elk Grove, California, that they created this ube bay cheesecake, the 8% imperial sour, which everyone out there apparently went crazy for, with it selling out in a weekend. The first batch, the second batch, it took 2 days. The third batch, it was all gone in 2 hours. There was another brewery out there in, I think it's Glenhurst, called Brewyard Beer, that made two ube beers themselves. Excuse me, made two themselves, one in IPA called Ube Wan, and an imperial brown lager with coconut called Ube Makupuko Delight. Now, for those who are here local in Detroit, you may already know that Eastern Market Brewing Company has a blonde ale with ube and coconut, just simply called Coconut Ube, that they had actually started making last year. And it definitely had some mixed reviews. It was from last year, where it was just kind of something that was very different, and people did not expect the flavor that the ube gives. But I kind of felt like people really warmed up to it, and they've put it out this past Wednesday, and people seem to have been kind of flocking to it. So good on them. But I was kind of curious, you know, with this craze that now seems to start with ube. You know, we've asked a lot of brewers about their exotic and experimental beers, what we'd like to try, see them, or what they would like to try in their beers. And, you know, some have come up with, you know, fruits and vegetables and shit we'd never even heard of. But I was curious about you guys. And, you know, are there any beers that you've enjoyed, or just cocktails, any type of drinks that have something that is kind of out of the ordinary that you like, or something that you'd like to see in like a cocktail or a craft beer? I'm going to start with Wendy on that.
I had a feeling you'd do that. I am so not picky when it comes to things like that. I'm willing to try just about anything. While we were talking, though, I opened up this Condor Valley Myth from Wax Wings, and it's a fruited sour conditioned on dragon fruit, banana, mango, and peach. And I really like the dragon fruit in there. It's very delicious. So I don't really know that I have anything that I would pick that I'm like, oh, we have to try this.
I mean, there's some that are, there's this one fruit that I absolutely do not like, but I would be curious what it would be like in a beer, being the star fruit. I do not like, I don't like the flavor of that damn thing, but I'm kind of curious what somebody would be able to do with it. And if it's even possible. I guess that's the other thing too, is that, you know, there are technological changes and advances that have been happening in the beer world, where people will be able to use things you normally wouldn't be able to use in a beer. But I guess it's kind of a wonder if it's even viable to do it. It may actually just be too damn expensive. But I'm kind of curious.
If we had less raspberry stuff.
There's way too much raspberry stuff.
There is way,
that's overdone. Let's find something else good. To use. No.
That and that there is a good question too about fruits that we're done with. So raspberries, there's one. Ken, your thoughts?
I'd be fine never seeing another strawberry beer.
Wait, where do you see strawberry beers?
Yeah, like Arbor those. Brewing's got strawberries and cream. You've got Strawberry Eisbach from Kunin. Dark Horse has got a strawberry beer. It's a lot of the stuff that I see, I'm not a big fan of, but when it comes to strawberries, I love strawberries, but in my beer, not so much.
But New Glarus and the tart strawberry, that's one of the best damn beers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm speaking local. There's not really too many like national beers that are made with strawberries that I could think of, but
yeah,
it's not my like my flavor, the style that I want. Like I don't mind fruit and beer. I just don't. I don't know. Strawberries just seem to really go against it. Before you go to Dan, I do want to bring up. I found two great reviews for the Yubé Coconut Blonde Ale. Quarter star, not a fan of coconut. That's a great one. And this one, I love coconut. I love beer. I love blonde ales. With that said, I cannot recall ever seeing a beer rated so high with reviews, a hometown brewery, than to pour this swill into a glass that came out purple. It was the most disappointed in a beer ever. Yuck.
See, and the first one I had, I didn't even know what the hell to think. Because there were just these flavors that I was not familiar with Ube, and you know what the flavor profile of that is, and it was weird. But then I gave it a second try, and I basically just felt like I fell in love with it, and it's just different, sweet, it's buttery, it's smooth.
But, if you like it, it's a good beer. That's what we always say, and it's not necessarily sure. the thing I'll go for though. Like if I saw that off of the shelf, because I'm looking at the color from Untappd photos, like I would look at it. Honestly, I think it would be a sour or something like that, just based on the color. But I probably wouldn't even bother, and it could be one of the best beers that I miss just because. The color itself is a little bit of a turn off, but
is it a purple color?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like a deep dark purple. Almost looks like a grape soda.
Yeah, I straight up just call that purple drink whenever I get it. But I mean that is a thing that you know there's a lot of beers that you know people could get turned off from because it doesn't look like beer. It looks like that they want a beer. And it looks like a smoothie, or it looks like a can of Faygo grape. It just doesn't look like a beer to some people.
Yeah, there's a brewery.
Can also get other people to try it.
Yeah, that is true.
There's a brewery out here that does a series of sours, and they make those bright colors because it's supposed to be like the Power Rangers. So there's like green, red, purple, and like I see it, and I think it's the biggest turnoff. But maybe it does turn people on. I mean, that Wendy says that.
If you gave me like a rainbow, like a fun little flight, sure, why not? Let's go for it. But if that's like, you know, if I'm drinking, you know, yellow, red, and brown, like that's just not the normal thing. Like if I see a purple, I'll be like, all right, I'll just continue drinking whatever else I'm drinking or whatever else you have. But there, you know, I'll say it. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Like there's just too many adjuncts in these beers. And that's my only problem, is it's not strawberry, it's strawberry, coconut, vanilla, chocolate, marshmallow, like, it's, yep. I just, one or two. Give me a peanut butter and jelly, or give me a, you know, a chocolate.
About none?
I mean, that too, but still, like, that's the one thing that I would like to see the curve bend, and I'm hoping with, like, as the world comes, and we're starting to drink a lot more lagers, but I don't know. That's just a personal wish.
Right. And excuse me. So Larry Lim in the chat, he brought up milkshake IPAs, which
clearly makes you want to throw up just thinking about that. It seems like something curdled. Like, it seems like you're drinking curdled milk when you think of that.
Nope.
Or like what?
It's delicious. Bring them on.
Wait, who doesn't like milk and pine? I mean,
I'll drink them all.
Great combination.
It's not that they're clear, or it's not that they're cloudy like that. It's the mouthfeel of it that the lactose brings.
Ugh, that even makes it worse.
It makes it a little bit thicker.
Well, unfortunately for me, it makes something a little thinner. So I can't be I can't be messing around with lactose. And the thing is that I typically am okay with milkshake IPAs. It takes a select few that can make a decent one, but it is a style that I'm not gonna go out and look for. I'm certain, and I mean with those, that's another one of those where they're throwing, you know, a variety of fruit that's going in. So I don't know if there's, I haven't seen any that are, you know, crazy, like, you know, an ube milkshake IPA.
If I'm not mistaken, over at Loaded Dice, they're doing a Ferndale Pride beer where proceeds go to Ferndale Affirmations, and they made a lactose hazy IPA with fruity pebbles, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, Jesus.
And I mean,
it's like I have to go with a Loaded Dice.
It's for a great cause. It's just not like it'd be one of those things where I'd probably buy the beer and give it to somebody because it's definitely not in my wheelhouse. Wendy's just like, give it to me.
Excuse me.
maybe when I go over there for the launch of the Don't Met the Martingale beer that we brewed over there. I will make sure to get you some cans or some. I think they're doing cans and draft there. So, but yeah, as people are chatting, of course you can join us if you're watching live. We go live 7 p.m. Friday nights. You can join us on facebook.com/betteronDraft or twitch.tv/bodpodcast. That's BODPODCAST. Join us. We love interacting with you guys, especially if we have a guest. You're free to answer or ask questions of our guests, and we'll make sure to try to sneak it in there. But Dan, before we continue with your article, was there a flavor that you want to get rid of? Was it lactose?
But you know what really needs to go too is banana. But especially in stouts, like get the hell out of here with that. There's way too many of those lately.
What's that English beer that was like a banana bread ale?
Oh, that sounds familiar.
I can't think of the name of it.
Isn't it banana bread?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what the brewery was.
I can picture the bottle.
Yeah, I can picture the bottle too. It's something you would get at like a Trader Joe's or something like that. This was like before the craft beer boom, where it was like Samuel Smith's, Wells, Larry Lim's.
Wells.
Yes.
Yep.
Samuel Smith's beers, and then that, like, those are like the crazy flavored ones that you could get in Michigan that weren't like that were international, because we didn't get too much unless you went to like Merchants. But Dan, what's the article you want to chat about today?
So totally going to shout out Rob for giving extra articles. I failed at life today, so
I only did a few. A lot of those were me.
But article follow-up that we've talked about actually a few times is the Minnesota governor signs the Growler 4 and 6-pack bill into law. So it looks like they're finally coming into the future. So Minnesota's largest craft brewers will finally be able to sell growlers of beer to go, while smaller brewers will be able to sell 4 and 6-packs after Governor Tim Walz signed into the liquor law reform bill on Sunday, which I believe was a couple weeks ago, back on the 23rd. Well, under the new law, the volume cap for breweries to sell growlers now will increase from 20,000 barrels up to 150,000 barrels. And the legislation will allow breweries producing fewer than 7,500 barrels to sell up to 128 ounces in 4 and 6-packs to go per customer per day. So that that's pretty interesting as far as I'm concerned, as far as the amount, the 128, we'll get to that in a second. But this affects the six biggest breweries being Surly, Shells, Lethbridge, Fulton, Indeed, and Castle Danger. It's a great name. So they're now able to sell growlers to go. What actually surprises me, and do you still think they're in the dark ages with this? 128 ounces of 4 and 6 packs is less than a 12 pack of beer. So are they still in the dark ages with this? It's great that Surly can sell a growler, but like, are you holding these guys back, these smaller breweries, from being able to make money? Because, you know, you can sell 128 ounces. You can't sell a growler, so there's not going to be two growlers there. So it's like, here you go. Here's your 10, 12-ounce bottles to go. It feels like they're still kind of holding these smaller beer makers back. Now, what do you guys think?
I recall, and I'm trying to find the date of the Craft Beer News article or Craft Beer News podcast, because this was something we spoke of two months ago. Because the main thing that was in there, and the huge detail, or two huge details, one is that nothing's happened in craft beer laws in Minnesota for over a decade, and they're requiring basically both distillers and brewers and stuff to sell off the rights of any law changes for the future.
For five years.
You did nothing for 10 years, and then you were given the opportunity to do something to sell the next 5 years. And they did it, which is, you know, good for them. They got something done, because apparently they weren't getting anything done earlier. This is where, are you going to call a win or a win not enough, Dan?
Yeah, see, I guess it's a win if you're one of those breweries who before couldn't sell, but like, all right, now I can sell you 10 bottles or 8 pints, like 8 16-ounce cans. Here you go. I guess that is a win.
Two four packs of 16-ounce cans.
Yeah. So there you go. I mean, that is a win, but God, it still sucks. It would suck to be a business in that state trying to make money and make ends meet, especially during the, and they touched on this in the article too, you know, other states, they were able to get away with to-go sales to keep them afloat. It wasn't the case in Minnesota. So it's, I guess it is a win, but it still sucks. And it sucks when you have states that, you know, I live in Arizona, we can do what we want. But when you have a state like Utah, where you can do more than a state like Minnesota, it tells you, you know, something's got to change. It's just too bad for them.
I mean, it's weak. It's
that's a good, yeah.
Like
yeah,
the grocery store beer, but on
yeah. The old 3.2.
Like, I mean, it's like, you know, my wife and I were watching this game show last night on Netflix, and you know, this contestant won $250,000, and they're all
watching happy. Squid Game.
No, it was not Squid Game. and they were sitting there just like all excited. And the first thing I'm thinking of is like, yeah, it's a win, but you know, the IRS is going to take 42% of that shit.
Yep.
So that's what it kind of feels like. It's just yeah. Like, all right, yeah, here's this you know, here's this little crumb for you, and oh, hold on, let me get the pill cutter out, cut that shit in half. That's your crumb, and enjoy that. So, I mean, it's small. It's just it's.
I don't understand that state at all. I don't understand the laws there like that. And what was the other state, Ken? Was it Minneapolis? Not Minneapolis.
Hold on.
Sorry, go ahead.
While that, yeah, there's an issue with that. You know, we still live in a state whose distribution for self-distro is still 10,000 barrels.
Yeah. So, the large thing with self-distro, most of it fixed itself, but it doesn't really give it room for future growth. Because at 10,000 barrels, you're looking at the top 10-ish breweries in the state of Michigan, and all of them have distribution networks throughout the state. So are you, and we're talking at the bottom of that 10,000 is like your Oddside, New Holland, Black Rocks. You know, there was like Barrel and Beam was trying to self-distro at one point. They're not as big as those, but I'm just saying is that the distribution within the state is like, it helped the breweries it needed to help. It's not going to affect the big breweries, but there still comes a point in time where we need to move forward without necessarily, because the distribution of the smaller breweries require the larger breweries to exist. So, I mean, it's I'm talking myself in circles because I both want like unlimited and the ability for small breweries to be able to get distro. But I still think that companies like Oath and M4 are going to exist no matter what because small breweries want that distro. Wendy, yeah. You're shaking your head.
Well, do we really want it? We don't want unlimited access because we think we do, but every time we get unlimited access, we stop buying it. So I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
Well, when I say unlimited access, I mean, I would love, let's go with, I'm trying to think. It's the first thing I could think of. I'm sorry, Rob. Charlotte Street. I don't want them to have to go through a distro to sell from their Detroit brewery to 8 Degrees Play-Doh or Detroit Shipping Company. Like, that's something
that's not even 700 feet.
That's the thing that I would like is some type of aerial distribution where you can skip the step because you're going to save money. Because that was one of the big problems with Eastern Market. They wanted a distro, but if they're selling it to Vivio's, it's got to go from Detroit to Ann Arbor M4 off a truck, on a truck, back to Vivio's. And that's a waste of a lot of money, time, effort, gas. And of course, if you don't trust the distro, mind you, we trust M4 because they're an amazing company. But if it's some, you know, like a larger company that might not care for your brand, they might not take too good care of your beer.
Right.
So let me ask you, because I'm not familiar with Michigan, is it up to 10,000 barrels you can self-distribute or do you have to be above 10,000 to self-distribute?
It's up to 10,000 and it doesn't include in-house sales.
Right.
So yeah, it seems restrictive because like here in Arizona, it's up to 40,000. If you operate a restaurant, you can self-distribute. If you're over 40,000 barrels a year, you can self-distribute as long as you don't have a restaurant. I don't know why that's a thing, but it does seem restrictive.
There's distro laws in like Ohio. Ohio, I think, is 1 million barrels.
It's 1 million. Yep.
At 10,000, even with the rules and regulations, Michigan is still the lowest. And that number used to be 1,000.
And in-house counted.
And in-house counted, yeah. So if you were doing, because I think at that point, Eastern Market might have just hit 1,000 in-house. Which is what they were pushing, which means they can't distro because the second you do 1,001 in house, you have to distro any beer you sell outside. So I think there's some updates that could be still done here in Michigan. But just like in Minnesota, which I would venture to guess in Minnesota, there is a lot of money from tavern organizations like. Remember how we were talking about like the Wisconsin Tavern Association? I know it's a different state, wanted to force breweries to sell all of their in-house beer to distro to rebuy it to sell it in-house. There's a lot of money in government lobbying, which is just going to hinder the consumer. So that's my take on like Minnesota. I feel like they did the right thing by doing something because they weren't getting anything done already. And I think in the next 5 years, you know what? If you want to stick to your 5 years, you can use the next 5 years to come up with another plan and then be like, hey, at 5 years, this is what we're going to ask. We'll sell you another 5 years if you give it to us. And maybe that's just what they do is that they create a plan of action to where every 5 years they update their liquor laws. And you know what that means? That they can, if they can continue to do that every 5 years, their liquor laws will be updated, which isn't too bad.
It's okay.
I mean, in Michigan, we did a lot of ad hoc laws this past year just because it was to save the industry. And, you know, a lot of them probably have sunset dates. And that's something that, you know, we do have as much as we are a struggling, you know, podcast and website, we do have a government insider that helps us a lot with understanding what's going on within the state. So maybe we'll get him to do some research and find out what laws might be going away and what, you know, leniencies are going to be coming back. So, but I'll let you guys answer Dan's questions because I talked a lot.
I think I was pretty clear. I don't know if Wendy had anything else to go with that.
No, I would just be reiterating everything everybody else said.
Okay.
Well, Wendy, what's your article?
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of the festival. So I found an article about the Great American Beer Festival today. It looks like they are coming back for the first time since 2019. They're going to sell 20,000 fewer tickets, though. Unfortunately, their longtime home, the Colorado Convention Center, is undergoing some construction, and it is going to limit the festival's footprint. It looks by about a couple hundred thousand square feet, which, you know, puts a little damper on things, especially in times where people are trying to be a little more socially distanced, I guess is the correct way to put it.
That's still a thing.
It is still a thing. While the case is spiking, they'll tell you it's still a thing. It's still the largest ticketed beer festival in the U.S. with 40,000 people. It's one of the larger events in Denver since COVID. It is Ann Obachain. I'm probably just crucified that name. I'm really sorry. A spokesperson for the Brewers Association said they are really excited for the expansion at the convention center because what it will bring next year is a bigger festival and a really cool space. They're going to have 500 breweries rather than 800. But the competition part, which I thought was interesting, which, you know, they've done as a hybrid event for the last 2 years, has over 10,000 entries. So it's the biggest competition of the festival so far. So I thought that was really cool. The tickets go on sale July 12th for American Homebrewers Association members and July 13th for the general public. They're $85 and $95. So I know we've had plenty of conversations about ticket pricing. What do you guys think of that?
I can't drink $85 or $95 worth of beer at a beer fest.
No, I mean, there's 500 breweries. I mean, are they all slinging beer? Like, Jesus. Yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, I wouldn't complain. I'd go. But, I mean, it's not a bad price. If you have your choice of 500 from around the country, I think that's a pretty good deal.
Right.
Yeah, I would say the same. Even with that price, yeah, I would go. If I had the means to get out to Colorado and go there, I mean, hell, I kind of feel like anyone who does a beer podcast or listen to a beer podcast would want to go to what is relatively considered as the Mecca of beer festivals. I mean, we have our festivals here with, you know, the winter, the summer, the spring fest, the fall, the there's that fifth one that I can't remember what the hell it is.
The UP?
The UP Fall Fest. UP Fall Fest. And, you know, those are great. And, you know, we're kind of spoiled with the amount of Michigan breweries that come out to those. But as much as I think we as Michiganders are spoiled with beer, the ability to go out to Colorado and check out 500 different breweries and see what's outside of Michigan and just around the country, that would be the shit. I would love to do that. But again, it's still spending doing that. And the one part that would piss me off the most is not being able to drink as much and try as many of the breweries as I could without having to go to, you know, Denver General to get my stomach pumped.
Got to go to one of those IV places that are the ones that come to you.
Right. I'm just gonna be showing up with an IV and just like, I'm staying hydrated this whole fucking time. Let's just go.
So there was at that Beers Without Beards and had 45 breweries. And I did my damnedest to try something from every single brewery. And that was a lot of beer. So, and that was only 45. But I think it was kind of funny because when we were at Webb, I was asking him for half pours, which that's a ticketed event. So my friend was like, what are you doing? Like she couldn't grasp the whole concept that I wanted.
Oh no, we lost Wendy.
Oh no. I was excited about the story too.
I'll cut in for a minute while we wait for Wendy to come on back. But for me, I do plan on going to the Great American Beer Festival this year. I'm excited to go check it out. As much as I don't think I could drink 80, like, so this event's 85, Nucleate tomorrow is 105. And you're
I don't know how you could fit 105 in Ann Arbor anyway.
Sorry, not 105 breweries, $105.
Oh yes.
We're also talking like sour, like really expensive beers, to where it's just it makes sense as to why, just because the price. But yeah, like Nucleate, it's expensive. I would go if it was in my wheelhouse of style. Like if it was a brown ale festival, maybe.
Dude, I'd love to find a brown ale festival.
But you know, for those who are sour lovers, like that's the mecca for sour lovers, because you're getting all those Belgian beers. Like 3F comes in, and
where's the alt beer festival?
It's up in Alaska. It's just called going to an Alaskan brewery and asking for Alaskan amber. No,
but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of breweries that are in there that you can't get here in Michigan. I mean, you can just barely get Bellwoods. Canteon is an absolute crapshoot. You got to play fucking Hunger Games to be able to get a bottle of that. Not that I even mess with that sour anyway, because I don't like it. Mortalis, Other Half, Southern Grist, which I think they just started doing distro here.
Yeah, you're getting a lot of the Michigan and U.S. sour beers, because it's not like, because the Belgian Beer Fest over at Ashley's was fucking amazing, for you to be able to get all those Belgian beers, and you got the Belgian sours and strong ales and quads and everything like that, but you didn't get like the national sours. But someone in the chat, Larry, said Cigar Fest. Now you guys know I love me a cigar.
I have not had one in a while.
It's been a few weeks for me, but usually after the show, I, you know, smoke a cigar in the garage and just kind of like chill out and relax for the rest of the night, because we finish at, you know, 9 o'clock, so it gives me enough time. But $150 to $200 for a Cigar Fest. I would be expecting a lot of cigars, not a lot, but a good amount of cigars on the way out of the festival for me to enjoy. So I don't know why where are you getting the money for Cigar Fests, unless they're like rolling everything into you know, small like tin cigarillo sizes.
It feels like you get like 20 tokens and a small portable humidor.
I mean, I'd be down for that. Like, you give me the ability to go and check out and, like, you know, go for the smells and see what I might like. And there's no real way to taste it. But I, you know, you give me like, here's 20 tokens, go find 20 cigars. And I'd be like a kid in a candy store. I'd love to do that just over at Genuine over in Sterling Heights. Like $100, 20 tickets, go find 20 stogies for you to take home. Larry right. Lim, Drew Estate, Barn Smokers, remaining tickets in Pennsylvania and Connecticut are $395. But it does include a pre-party the night before. I did have the opportunity to meet Jonathan Drew once, and very short but very nice guy. That's all I remember from him, but that was also like 15 years ago. So, Wendy, we were excited to hear about your short pour adventure and your friend going crazy. Why don't you tell us about it?
I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on with my internet. She could not wrap her mind around the fact that I would ask him for a half pour and give him my ticket, because I'm like, I know that you need the tickets to do this, but I want less. I want to try more things, which means I need to drink less alcohol while I'm there. Especially because I was there for the long haul and I was volunteering, so I had to go back and be sober.
Because the beer fests, the guild festivals, I would ask a lot of times, especially for the high octane beers, for half pours of so many things, just because one, when you're, you know, we've talked and met so many amazing brewers within this podcast where everyone wants to stop and talk to you and show you their new beers. And in turn, you're drinking two or three or four beers at every single brewery you stop at. And you're like, all right, I need to like go say hi to other people and stay sober. And that's kind of what happened at the Spring Beer Festival over in Traverse City. Cause I hadn't drank in, 7 months. Two, I hadn't seen so many of these people, like, you know, people that I consider friends, since either the Jimmy John's Fest that we host over in October at Jimmy John's Field, or before that, probably the Winter Beer Fest 2020. So seeing those people was great. At the Spring Beer Fest and at the Web, however, Dan, you'll be excited for this, there were no two-token beers.
Wow. I'm impressed.
Everything was one token.
Does it just mean the beer sucked, or are they just like, no, we'll take one token for that?
Well, as we kind of spoken when we had Arvon on, some of the beers themselves are just so pricey. And there's price limits and price things that go on between the guild and the festival to where that's why, like, the ticket prices were going up. So some of those beers that, like, Wax Wings makes and Arvon makes just get super pricey to where that's why they're two tokens. But now that we've passed the law in Michigan, I'm curious to see when events will actually start not ticketing for the beers themselves. Because I haven't been to a festival that hasn't, as well as if you guys download the Michigan Brewery Map app, which is at mibeermap.com, you can find all the upcoming beer festivals. A lot of the beer festivals mention how many tokens and tickets they are that you get for that. So I don't know if it just needs to change or if the law, if it mattered that it changed. And we're just going to stick to it. But that's just kind of what I've seen. I mean, Dan, have you gone to any festivals down in Arizona yet?
A couple. The ones that I've been to, you pay per beer anyways. So
what do you mean really pay per beer?
Like, it's not, you walk up and you buy the beer. Like the one in Mesa does that every year. I haven't been to one where you get tokens yet. The ones I've tried to go to, they've ended up canceled because of COVID. So yeah, the ones I go to, you pay for each beer that you buy. There's no entrance fee or anything.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it a sample?
Depending on what you want. You could get a pint, you could get a 5 ounce or a 12 ounce.
So it's almost like a mobile bar.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, you could walk around and get whatever you want. You just pay for each beer that you get.
I imagine it would be really expensive for me.
You know what they do need to do then is that instead of doing a you pay at each site, you get like a fob or something like that that's tied to your credit card or like a wristband. And I can just imagine the amount of money some people will pay when they don't have to look at how much money they're paying.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
What do you call it, theory? The what's that thing you go on all the time, Wendy? Cruise ships.
Yeah.
You know, you just have a card and it's unlimited. And just keep swiping. You don't know what your bill is.
Oh, if you're smart, you look at the thing every night before you go to bed, or at least every morning when you wake up to see what you spent the night before.
We went to the Web. We had a gracious host, World Expo of Beer. They allowed us to put up a nice little banner of the Michigan Brewery Map app to promote it. So we appreciate their hospitality over there. The after party over at the Bavarian Inn Lodge, there's a lot of people who just went to the festival that were at the lodge and were hanging out at the Radskeller. Compliments to Wes over there. Wes was buying people Oddside Ale seltzers, so if you were lucky enough to be there, you got a seltzer. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. I was happy I spent the extra money to stay just at the Bavarian Inn, just because it was just a walk right over there. So for future, if you guys are interested in going to the World Expo of Beer, which it's the same weekend every year in May, go check it out and stay at the Bavarian Inn. It's a walk away, and there's plenty of food and drink options. And yeah, that's my little plug for them, as they were gracious to us, and I want to make sure that they know we appreciate them for sure. Also, that Helles Alt from Big Heart was so good. I drank so many of those. It was pouring out in the fest, and it was pouring. I think it won gold, or it won some medal over at the festival itself too. But I think next year we need to help and work on getting more out of state breweries to Webb.
I agree.
We need to just be like, hey, you guys should, you know, send some beer for this competition. Maybe
put some suggestions in the chat. And see
if we get enough people to come and be a part of Webb, they'll let me be one of the judges.
I think you just need to ask Jim Brown.
I'm just saying.
To allow you to judge. And Jim,
like, if you want to judge, just ask.
We have that conversation every year.
I'm surprised. Well, because they always have three people at every table, and the whole point of the judging for World Expo is to be a little bit different, because they have like the true BJCP judge, the guy or gal who wants to be a BJCP judge, and then a third person. And yes. The third person would be someone like Dan. But Dan, your job, like,
I hate this beer.
No, your job is to have like the BJCP guidelines right on your phone. And make sure people are paying attention, because, you know, we're all human. We get into grooves and we get into our own beliefs and our own, you know, some might say we're narcissistic about something. And we get into that type of conversation, and then we're stuck. So Jim has that third person to throw in a wrench to be like, well, it doesn't really follow this, and make you explain as the BJCP judge or the one who's in training why you know, believe what you believe in. So I think it's a great way to judge, because, again, especially when your palate starts to get really, really burnt from all of the beers, it really gives you a different perspective. And it makes that person be like, you know, oh, my God, I'm getting butter. Really? I'm not getting butter on mine, you know. That's a call out if you had any infected beer, diacetyl. That's something I learned at the World Expo of Beer. I was so happy. They were so nice that year that I went over there to check out the judging. But as we continue, folks, I want to talk about something just because we kind of touched on it with Athletic Brewing. And within Athletic Brewing, there is the opportunity that they might get bought. And there was a news article from Brewbound that talked about Anheuser-Busch, the big dogs here in the United States, focusing on acquisitions and mergers for the future. Obviously, they've bought plenty of breweries we know, Goose Island, Elysian,
Four Peaks,
Craft Brewers Association, I think is the name of like a conglomerate of craft breweries that were together. I think Kona's in it. So there's a lot. If you go to your Wikipedia, you can actually find all the breweries that are on there that are owned by Anheuser-Busch. But I wanted to make a little bit of a game as we kind of end this show. Where is it, the Webb? The Webb is in Frankenmuth, Michigan, Larry Lim. Again, chatting with us over on Facebook. Michigan's little Bavaria town. Go to the cheese house. Get plenty of cheese.
Learn German.
Yep, that's where the World Expo beer is. I want you guys to think, and I'll give you guys my two thoughts, of a Michigan brewery and a U.S. brewery that you think is set up, and don't cheat, can't use modern times in here, set up to be bought by Anheuser-Busch, or let's say Molson Coors, Constellation. I'll even add, well, not Kings and Convicts, because
I don't know, they're buying everyone up too.
I know. But what are a local brewery and a non-local brewery that you think could be ripe for the purchase? Now, for me, when I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about a lot of breweries and expansion and not. I think, and this is going to be the first one, which is going to be a, we'll use it as the national brand. I think Canarchy is going to get bought.
Really?
I think Canarchy is ripe for the picking for the right price. I think they have four or five breweries under their belt. They've got one in Texas. And of course, we know the big ones, Oscar Blues, Parent, Cigar City. But I don't think they're seeing the growth they want to see within their brand itself. Now, being international, you have larger breweries. This would be great for a brewery Kieran? To buy up to where you can create beer in different states and be able to sell it. So you can, you know, instead of being stuck with just brewing Perrin at Perrin, now you can brew something at Perrin, maybe from Goose Island or from Elysian or Four Peaks. You know, what if we got our own Four Peaks up in Perrin? Or, you know, they're just contracting the beer. They're not, they're just brewing it at Perrin. So that's my first one. That's my national, not my local, but my national brewery that I think is ripe for the purchase.
All right.
My local brewery that I think is ripe for the purchase is Right Brain. So I think Right Brain is falls within the issue of being stagnant and falling off over the past decade. Not that their quality or anything's fallen off, but they haven't adapted very well, in my opinion, to the industry as a whole. I think they're making amazing drinks, but I think they're still stuck in 2012. And I think, you know, Russ is doing something great up there, but I think sooner or later, the money man's going to call. And by money man, I mean Anheuser-Busch is going to call and be like, hey, we'd be interested in buying it. And I think Right Brain is the local brewery that could potentially be bought. Now, that's just my opinion. This is all speculation on just what I see in the industry. Nothing could be true. You know, we think and we look at these things and we think what would be good as a business move for this bigger brewery who's looking to purchase. Now, some of the breweries that these breweries buy, you know, are about that size. So I think, you know, Canarchy would be a huge buy. That's as a conglomerate, a top five or top three brewery, not asset wise, but barrelage wise. But again, after one and two, Yuengling, Sam Adams, it's a huge fall. So I think that. But Dan, you could choose Arizona too if you believe that Arizona might be easier for you since you've been there for a while. But Rob. One national, one state. Who do you think could be ripe for the purchasing of craft beer from Anheuser-Busch? I mean, we've had it here. We've got, you know, obviously San Miguel. And when I say large, I mean Lion, San Miguel. Like, we just had Bell's get bought out by Lion. You know, I'll sneak in some hints for you guys. You know, New Holland has a huge deal with Pabst for distribution, just distribution. They don't own any part of the company. Lush owns 19.99% of Shorts. You know what? Yeah. What do you think could be a potential purchase by a local or by a national or international brand?
Whew, this is hard. So, I'm gonna start local because my mind is like thinking more local. So I would probably say local. My mind is on one. I don't feel like
nothing happens if you get this wrong.
Or yeah,
never happens. I hope you know this.
I just don't want them coming back to me like, "What the fuck, man? Why'd you pick my brewery? That's some bullshit. We're not selling. We're not doing this. We're independent."
Bullshit. Everybody's got a price.
Yeah,
and you know, shout out to Steven Rogenson of Batch, who even said that on our show. And we asked him if ABV or ABI came with a blank check, would you take it? And he's like, I'm thinking about my employees. I'm thinking about my family. I'm thinking about their family. I made this business to be able to provide. Sure, I want to create beer, but I want to provide for them. And hell yeah, I'd take it. That part of that alone almost made me want to say Batch. But for the size, you know, the brewery that I was thinking about locally was Griffin Claw. And, you know, with their profile of the beer, the cider, and holy hell, the cider, that, you know, I'm thinking, you know, Griffin Claw could, while obviously they don't have the distro to go nationwide, but, you know, if ABI put the money toward it and started pushing not only the beer, but pushing the ciders as well, that could be a hell of a cider name that could be put out there. So Griffin Claw would be my local. For my national, I was pretty much just kind of, always when it comes to national, I think about the breweries in California, because there are some damn good breweries out there in California that I would love. This may be just more bias that, you know, that there's breweries out in California that I would love to be able to get here. And, while I don't feel like they are stagnant at all, and you know that they do have some distribution. I'm not going to say BottleLogic, because BottleLogic doesn't really reach out that far. So I would kind of say, I would probably say Deschutes.
I've brought that up years ago. You guys were shocked.
Like, I used to love Deschutes. Like, that was, like, when I started to really get back into craft beer, that I used to love getting, like, a whatchamacallit,
Black orange Butte fresh Porter.
Yeast. The Black Butte Porter. And the Deschutes is just kind of, like, I mean, even when I was out in Portland last October, my bosses took us to the Deschutes, and I was just kind of like, damn, I used to like this brand. And I'm not sure if maybe it was just the beard, that one beard that I had. But I was just like, man, this feels like not as good as I remember it used to. So like when you're talking about that whole stagnant feel, the Deschutes kind of gives me that stagnant feel, because I haven't touched the Deschutes in a while. Now, obviously they are still a big producer. And clearly, with being that big of a producer, they're putting out product and people are buying the product and enjoying it. So kudos to them for putting it out there and people enjoying it. But I've got to feel like, for me, that would be one of those that are out there that, hey, ABI could snap them up and could turn them. And I mean, they have distro almost all over the place. So that'd be one where they have minimal setup that they have to deal with. No, that's where I guess where I am.
You got Griffin Claw and Deschutes. Wendy, what about you?
Well, I was going to talk about New Holland, but since somebody else mentioned it, one of the other ones that I was thinking about was Holmes, because they are still kind of expanding. They're still making a name for themselves on a regular basis. They've kind of diversified their portfolio a little bit with some of the options that they have, and they're getting notice outside of the state. So that would be my local brewery that I think would be getting attention from some of the bigger breweries. Nationally, I'm not sure. I thought of Lion until you brought it up, but I think maybe something like Sun King out of Indianapolis. I mean, they've been increasing their production quite a bit over the last years. They're pretty big and get a lot of attention, and people like their beer. It's fantastic beer.
So I think they're kind of like, I kind of compared them to Bell's here. So, I mean, they would probably be getting a lot of attention. Those would be my picks.
I was kind of hoping you were going to go bias with one of your other breweries that you like in Trogues.
I thought about that too, but I don't want that to happen because I really like them. I mean, I want them to be bigger, obviously, but no, I was thinking Sun King because I can get them. I know more people know of them. They're more easily accessible right now. At least in the people that I know.
Yeah.
Before we get into some of the thoughts in the chat, Dan, what about you?
So if I was going Arizona, there aren't the one brewery, Four Peaks, you know, was already bought. So there aren't a whole lot that are really ready. There are two, I think, of assuming someone would want to get into spirits in addition to beer, which would be Oso and Santan. Those are the only two I can really think of that would be ready to go.
I mean, that hits the ability to work on RTDs, too.
That is true. So those would be the local ones. Those are the only two I can think of locally. The one in Rob, I thought about Deschutes too. I had brought that up years ago, but they seem to be still on the family-owned and employee-owned thing. But the one that really sticks out in my mind is in California, and that would be AleSmith. Is the one that someone could really buy and jump into with the distribution already in place and the portfolio of beer that they have and that they distribute already. You really could pick that up and really start to shoot it out everywhere really quickly and probably be successful.
It's been a long time since I've had Speedway Stout.
For sure. It's great beer.
Ooh. I feel like we need to maybe plan on a show upcoming where we, you know, go back to some of our roots of the beers that came into our states and, you know, maybe go get a mixed match six pack from Zatuna Liquor. And bring in your Speedway Stout and bring in your Fat Tire and bring in, you know, all these beers, Deschutes, that we just kind of, we take for granted here in Michigan, that we don't try. In the chat, Larry Lim's asking Larry Lim says that'll be a sad episode. I think it'll be a great episode.
I don't know why I'd be sad.
I had Guinness for the first time like a week ago in a long time, and I'm like, oh my god, I love this beer. But he was asking,
it was really thick.
It was very super thick. Larry's asking, is Jolly Pumpkin still a thing? Yes, Jolly Pumpkin is. They're part of the Northern United Brewers Company, NUBCO. So if you were unaware, North Peak, Grizzly Peak, Blue Tractor, Jolly Pumpkin, I think Boston's officially closed. I don't think they're even brewing in the basement over there anymore.
Rest in peace.
So yeah, that's the Jolly Pumpkin circle. So they're still going strong. Whenever I used to go to Seattle, I used to always have to bring Jolly Pumpkin bottles to a friend of mine that used to live in Michigan because that was the thing he loved. He says, and this, so I feel like this would also run into the issue, which I hate to say I disagree with Holmes because I just don't think Holmes fits in the portfolio unless it doesn't fit in the portfolio. So that might be a reason why they want it. But Larry Lim suggested the brewery.
That's not a bad choice
either. That's definitely not a bad choice. And I'm still a huge fan of Black Tuesday, of what the hell's the Wednesday one? I can't remember that one, but that one was amazing. The PB and Thursday, like when they brought out those stouts, those were pretty damn good. And I'm hoping that when I go out to DC in September that I get a chance to stop over there at their DC location and kind of reminisce on some of those barrel aged stouts that they put out. Although of course they were $40 a bottle. So, you know, those were a little pricey.
There was a beer back when they were doing the 12 Days of Christmas or whatever series. They're Nine Ladies Dancing. I would love.
Oh yes.
If someone listening or if one of you guys has eyes on a Nine Ladies Dancing, I would love to try that. Probably 5 years old now. It was such a good beer, and I just loved always just cracking it because that was like the one bottle I drank that whole night because it was a giant ass bottle too.
But I think I remember I picked those up for you because I was out in San Fran visiting my brother, and they were out there for like $10 a piece.
Oh, probably. Probably for sure. That means I probably...
it was like June.
That might have been also like back in the 20% beer shows where we would drink like 15 to 20% beers. but yeah, so that's it. So we've got... I said Canarchy, and I said Right Brain. Rob, you went with Deschutes and
Griffinclaw.
Wendy, you went with Holmes and not Trogues, Sun King.
And so I want to bring up too, what about Southern Tier? I can't believe none of us brought that up.
I forgot all about them. I'm not gonna lie. Like,
I know, but we all get their beer.
Well,
I pick it up every time I can.
We'll have to in the Slack come up with, because I know we have a lot of interviews upcoming. So maybe the first episode in August won't be an interview episode. Maybe we'll plan for that to be like a callback episode. And that'll be an episode where we'll all plan on going to get beers that just don't exist anymore, don't exist in our brain anymore. Like, we don't think about it. But we've got plenty of interviews upcoming, including the Michigan Series, number 26, Big Lake Brewing is going to be on next week, as well as the American Homebrewers Association president, Julia Herz. The following week, June 17th, is our Drinking While Black 2022 episode. So, Wendy and Dan, you have the night off.
I don't get to be on that show?
Sadly, no.
Hell no.
The following week, we have Ogba, who did awesome in our March Draftness competition. We have July 1st, we are off for July 4th weekend. July 8th, Unexpected Brewing, the Michigan Series number 28. We get to hear the full story as to what happened from River Rouge to Unexpected. Then the following week, Partake Brewing. Another NA brewery coming onto the show. The 22nd, we are off for the Summer Beer Festival. And the 29th, hopefully we get XED Beverages on to talk to us about sake seltzers.
They ever going to show up?
Yeah, you know what? When they show up is when I'll believe it. So that'll bring us to August 5th, which will be our callback show. Cool. So that'll be episode 295. Almost at 300, which we're going to be throwing a party. If you guys are interested in joining us on the party, throw us a comment below on this video, YouTube, Facebook. You can write us a review saying, hey, I want to come to the party. If you make it one star, we might not invite you, but five stars, you know, that's going to look good for me. I should say for us, not for me.
Yes. Careful now. Careful now. Us. Careful.
So narcissistic.
I know.
Here comes five more reviews.
You know what? I can't. Those reviews are coming after the June 17th show.
Yeah.
I already
feel that. That's when they normally show up.
It's not all about you, Ken.
No, it's not.
Rob's dreading the reviews now.
I'm not.
I consider them wins.
We got bad reviews. We got bad reviews last time because we were being too political and politics and beer. And like, I'm sorry.
I didn't know being black was being political.
Why you gotta be so political, Rob? Damn it. Stop it.
There's only so much that I can do just because, you know, I got melanin popping. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, Rob, you rest your voice. We'll see you next week for the rest of us. Thank you so much for joining us. No matter what you think of your beer, we think it's better on draft. Have a good night.
Chocolate rain.
Thank you so much to our sponsors, the Tuna Liquor in Rochester Hills, just south of M59 and Rochester Road, and North Center Brewing over in Northville, Michigan. Go find us on all of our social medias. That's Better on Draft on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and now TikTok. And of course, find out what we were drinking by friending us on Untappd. We will see you next week.